I would say the student's perspective and how they view math has grossly changed in a positive way. I hear from parents who send emails, the positive emails, and from students' feedback as well. But just as far as them saying, I enjoy the struggle, the productive struggle. I enjoy looking at math from a different lens. I enjoy seeing how it plays into the future or being able to solve problems. One of our big things.
You're listening there to Tom Marker, a sixth grade teacher from Ohio. And actually, this is Tom's third time on the podcast. We've brought him back to continue exploring his journey into his teaching strategies on what's going on in his math class. So he's here to kind of continue that journey, talk to us about changes that he's made since the last time we chatted. And we're eager to dive right in.
This is another Math Mentoring Moment episode where we chat with a teacher just like you who's working through some problems of practice. And together, we brainstorm ways to overcome them. Welcome to the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr. We are from MakeMathMoments.com.
This is the only podcast that coaches you through a six-step plan to grow your mathematics program, whether at the classroom level or at the district level.
And we do that by helping you cultivate and foster your mathematics program like a strong, healthy, and balanced tree.
The trunk represents leadership in your organization or the classroom pillars in your math class. The roots of your tree represent mathematics content knowledge and what it means to be mathematically proficient.
Like a tree requires soil, water, and sunlight, your mathematics program requires a productive educator mindset and the belief that all students can achieve at high levels. Your professional learning structure or your professional learning plan is represented by the limbs of the tree.
The branches of your tree represent the development of educator pedagogical content knowledge, including effective teaching and equity-based teaching practices. And finally, the last section is the leaves of the tree, representing resources, tools, and the classroom environment.
If you master the six parts of an effective mathematics program, the impact of your math program will grow and reach far and wide.
Every week, you'll get the insight you need to stop feeling overwhelmed, gain back your confidence, and get back to enjoying the planning and facilitating of your mathematics program for the students or those educators that you serve.
So we're going to jump right into the conversation with Tom. But if you stick around, you're going to hear the nuggets that Tom brings for you to make those changes in your classroom. He talks about breaking away from reliance on the calculator and how we can do that. He talks about problem strings and how that's changed the mathematical confidence in his students. And he's also going to talk about how do we keep that curiosity a little longer with our students, because that actually can drive the relationships in your classroom. So let's get digging.
Here we go. Tom, welcome back to the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. How are you, my friend? Long time no chat.
I'm doing great. Thank you. Yeah, just into the summer mode and trying to wrap some things up in the school year and switching over to a new middle school. So yeah, it's been busy.
Yeah, fill us in, Tom. We chatted with you way back on episode 129, then again on 186. You're making the rounds now. You're almost tied with Peter Little at all. So
wow, that'd be amazing.
And James Tanton. Don't forget James Tanton,
right. 3.5, I think his quote he says. But Tom, fill us in on the last time we chatted. What's new? What's changed? Give us maybe a win and then maybe something that you're like, I wish this went differently.
I would say I've been involved a little bit with the building thing in classrooms, trying to implement that a little bit more. And I think it went well for the most part. I think we've developed some more creative thinkers and kids that are willing to take a little bit more risks. So I think that's been an improvement. I will say state test scores come back. They've come back in Ohio, and those are always, just depending on how you understand the data and how you implement the data, I think some people will take it as wins and losses and how students do. But for me, being a baseball coach as well, we often talk about the wins don't always show up on a scoreboard. And I think that's true in the math classroom as well. I think some people may look at percent proficient as a win or a loss. us. And I think we might even talk about that in previous talks with you guys. But to me, I've seen a lot of growth in our students just in their, I'd say, eye contact and student skills. And maybe that doesn't always show up on the passing of test scores, but whether they've grown as a student in their ability to articulate things in the math classroom or their willingness to take risks, I've seen a lot of improvement there. So the test scores are the test scores. And I think some of them did really, really well. Some of them may have wished they did better on a single day in a snapshot. But overall, the course of the year, I think we've made some huge strides.
Huge, huge. And something else, too, I think that's really important. Like you had said, I want to dig a little deeper on this idea of maybe sometimes some of the changes not showing up on the scoreboard. And I think that's true, especially in math class, because the reality is there is such a long journey. So when you implement anything in your math classroom, oftentimes it's not year one when all of a sudden everybody hops on board and everything is looking great. And the other piece that I think is really important for us to remember is that test scores are often compared to a different group of students, right? That trailing data where you're looking, you're going, hey, this new class, I tried all these new things, and then they ended up scoring similarly to last year's class. But wait a second, that was a different group. Imagine if there was a way for us to be able to see what would have happened if we went one way versus another with the same group of students, which I know we don't have the authority or the ability to do in this world. But I think that's something that's really important for us to remember in education, is that the mini wins are really important. It sounds like you had some anecdotal sort of evidence that suggested that you were making some gains in certain areas. So I'm wondering, over this past school year, what would you say would be, if you had to pick one thing, and I'm sure there was many that you were trying to improve pedagogically for your students, but what would be like the one area that you would say that was most important to you to trying to sort of make some gains in?
I think of it as breaking down barriers, right? And I would say the students' perspective and how they view math has grossly changed in a positive way. I hear from parents who send emails, the positive emails, and from students' feedback as well. But just as far as them saying, I enjoy the struggle, the productive struggle. I enjoy looking at math from a different lens. I enjoy seeing how it plays into the future or being able to solve problems. One of our big things is proportional reasoning and percentages, and them telling me when I go with my parents to a restaurant, I can calculate the tip quickly for them, or I can say that's probably not fair and have conversations about that. And so I think that's the cool part, is hearing about how they have conversations with their parents about math, but they don't feel like it's math class. It's real life application. And I think that would be probably the biggest win. And I also think that true growth, it's not a linear progression. Development isn't linear. You're not going to just continually get better at math. You're going to have pitfalls. You're going to have days where there's some struggles or content where it's more difficult for a student to understand. But I would say the biggest gains would be the conversations that I hear them having with their parents and then outside of the math class.
That is a huge gain. And what a gift to give to the parents. What a gift to give to the kids. When I say give, it's something that they created. You created with them. It's a team aspect for sure. Tom, what would you say when you think about that big win and you think of that big change? What changes did you put in place this year, last year, over the course to create this atmosphere, to create these wins? What do you think is probably you can contribute some of the actions that you've taken to kind of build that?
I think we talk more about approach in the classroom and more about character traits and more about resiliency and problem solving. We talk more about those things as opposed to talking strictly about curriculum. And I think in math, getting over those hurdles and the nervousness, our students are more inclined to ask the why nowadays and the challenge. And I think a lot of times students come into the classroom and think they just need to listen as opposed to challenge. And I tell them all the time, challenge my thinking, or if you have a better way to approach, feel free to speak up. I think a lot of times they think asking why is disrespectful, or saying, I don't fully agree with that way is disrespectful. And I think we've created a community of learners within the classroom where we challenge each other. We joke around a lot, but also have the seriousness when it's needed. But I just think the challenging piece and the research piece and telling students, look up ideas or try to find new ways, get on YouTube. What's the big talk right now with chat? What is it?
GPT?
Yeah. And people are so nervous about it. And I love it. I think hearing different voices in that regard is probably not a voice, but seeing how it's described or spoken about differently or explained differently, I'm all about. But I think if you're just given drill style questions and not very deep level thinking questions, yeah, then you're probably a little bit worried about that. But I think having kids utilize the resources that are at their fingertips is okay. I think, I don't know, I don't get too worried about those things.
I love it. I heard you say something in that description of what has been going on in the classroom. You're articulating this, students feeling almost open and willing to accept that productive struggle. And then also you highlighted how they've maybe shared with you how they've leveraged some of their math flexibility or their fluency that they've developed to use outside of school. And that reminded me, you mentioned that it seems like students are now more interested in understanding the why. I remember your Pebble was about parents and helping them to understand the why. Do you feel or do you sense that they're starting to see that? Is that pebble starting to sort of get kicked out of that shoe as they start to witness and observe their own children acting maybe differently, having more of a productive disposition towards the mathematics? Is that helping you get, I guess, further down that road? Or do you feel like that's still a pebble that you're kind of working on? Where's your head at there?
One, I teach in an unbelievable district, Olentangy City Schools. I don't know how familiar you are with it, but it's an awesome district. And my daughter's in fifth grade. And I think one thing that's helped me as a sixth grade math teacher is the way that they're teaching math at the younger levels. And I see it with my fifth grader. I saw it when she was in fourth and third grade as well. And so my wife still will see the homework or the work that my daughter's working on in questions, say, and my mother-in-law is, why aren't we just doing the old school long division and having those questions? And I try to stay quiet so I don't get myself in too much trouble. But they're teaching them so many good ways and methods of solving problems at the younger levels that it's making my job easier as a sixth grade math teacher. So where I was worried about parents wondering, why aren't we doing it this way or this method and questioning the whys, I don't see it as much anymore. But I think it's because our district is doing such a good job as a whole. I've talked to teachers in PD that have read Building Thinking Classrooms and have implemented that and are getting away from the calculator. I teach sixth grade math. I don't remember a student using a calculator, maybe until we were working on projects at the very end of the year and we were seeking answers as opposed to understanding the why. But students don't ask about calculators at all in sixth grade math, at least what I deal with, unless it's something, and we tell them all the time, if it's something ridiculous that we're dealing with, or maybe that getting the answers more important than the understanding, then go ahead. But it's a testament to our district, I think.
Awesome. I love it.
Yeah, I love it as well. Let's say a teacher is listening right now, and when they hear that you're not using a calculator in the sixth grade, they're like, oh my gosh, how do I get my students to kind of break away from reliance on that? And what would you say to them, Tom? And give us maybe something that you're doing in your classroom, a teacher move that kind of says, this is how you can do it too, and make sure that you're focusing on this, or you can do it this way to help kind of break students away from that kind of crutch to go straight to the calculator.
I think you have to be really strategic in the questions that you ask and the prompts and the problems that you put in front of students, because I think oftentimes we don't think out those problems ahead of time. So I think that's one thing, is just to make sure you're not asking questions that have, I don't want to say ridiculous answers, but those problems where you're like, oh man, I didn't mean to give the student a question that ended in this repeating decimal or whatever the case may be. I think you have to be strategic in the problems and the prompts that you put in front of students. And then also, I think, to give the students the flexibility to be close to answers. I think a lot of times, say for instance, we were given a 20% tip of $13.79. I think to be close is really important. If you're saying 20% and you're saying, okay, that's, where is that going to be? 274 is close. You don't have to be exact. Being a ballpark in real life mathematics, I think a lot of times serves you well. Now, obviously, if you're a doctor and you're dealing with doses and things along those lines, you want to be pretty precise. But I think talking and having the conversation about precision and about accuracy and when it's vitally important, when it's not. But I think that's important. I also think problem strings have changed the way we operate my classroom a lot. And just seeing how to work from seeing patterns and understanding those things and how important it is to know that if you know 10%, you know 5% and 20%, and then you know 25%, and make those connections and see it on their own. And we've done a lot of things with problem strings in my classroom where students will pick up on it quicker than other students. whether it's we go from 10%, I use percentages a lot, anything with proportions, but 10% to 40%. And then they see 4%. They're like, well, how am I ever going to figure out 4%? Where another student might catch it quickly. And I think that's important.
For sure. I love it. And I'm so happy you just gave me some excitement, because I think problem strings are massively helpful. Those who are listening and are leveraging our units of study that we have on our website, day 2 and day 4 of each unit typically have a problem string like you're describing, trying to emerge a specific behavior of the mathematics, right? And I love your focus on proportional reasoning. Such an area we know from research where we lose so many students, right? They decide that they are no longer math people because they do not have that fluency, that flexibility. They don't have that tools, the models. And it sounds like you and your district are doing a fantastic job with that. Now, I want to end on, I don't want to take us down from a positive end to this school year, but I'm wondering, as you go into summer, this is when we're recording it for those who are listening, heading into the summertime, what's on your mind now? It doesn't necessarily have to be a massive problem or pebble, but I'm wondering, where's your head at in terms of what are you hoping to kind of put your thinking towards in order to continue this really positive trajectory that it seems that you and your students are on for next year?
I think every year, again, I'm a baseball coach as well, but as a teacher or as a coach, I just hate that there's times where we lose one or two students. And how do we make sure that doesn't happen? And how do we make sure that everyone has an enjoyable, and everybody's, you're always going to have students who don't enjoy it, or players that don't enjoy the season, or whatever the case may be, but it still eats at me that we lose students at times. And I think even speaking to test scores, sometimes we'll get a test score back and we'll say, I kind of knew that was going to happen. Well, why did we let that happen? Or that student was struggling all year. I knew that they weren't going to perform well throughout the course of the year. But then I guess I would challenge it to say, then why did we let it? Because if we knew it, then why did we let that happen? And so I think it's me finding a way to better utilize my teacher support, whether it's other teachers in the room, aides in the room, even really strong students in the room. How do we leverage them to make sure that we don't have anybody fall through the cracks? I think as teachers, we always say that. And I've seen it in teacher meetings, or we'll say so-and-so has been struggling all year and we're in January. Why haven't we fixed this yet? If we know it's happening, what are we doing to find out and make it better? So
that's huge, because how many middle school teachers, high school teachers are in those positions where you know the student is struggling and you're not exactly sure what to do to get them over that ledge, or maybe you miss them along the way. That is a huge concern and should be a huge concern for us in our classrooms. When I think about that, I think about systems. I think about, what is it in my classroom system, my moves, my outside kind of structures and procedures when I'm thinking about planning lessons and follow-ups to lessons and in assessments and follow-up assessments that can catch those gaps, I'll say. Tom, what kind of systems are you putting into place, or have you put into place, to help catch those students and not let them slip through those gaps?
Hey, Math Moment Makers, Kyle here, and I've got just a quick message specifically for our district-level mathematics decision makers out there. Do you feel like you're spinning your wheels when making district-level goals for mathematics programming from kindergarten through grade 12? Setting new goals each year only to find little to no real shift in pedagogical practice or educator content knowledge across the district as a whole? Take a moment to book a short call with our team so we can learn more about your specific district and educator learning needs in mathematics, so we can assist you in taking the first step of many in the right direction. Visit makemathmoments.com/district to book a web call with our team today. We have a limited number of spots for districts just like yours, so don't wait. Head to makemathmoments.com/district and grab a spot in our calendar now.
I mean, I really think, at least in the middle school level, relationships is everything. Just trying to forge a relationship where they trust you as a teacher, because I think a lot of times they probably had historical struggles in the classroom. And so I think it's really important for us to find out why, though. I don't think any student walks into your classroom and says, I want to fail or I don't want to do well. There's always a why behind their actions and their struggles as well. So I think really working hard to get a relationship with the student to make them enjoy coming to class. First and foremost, probably the most important thing is students aren't going to do well if they don't enjoy being in the environment. And so just trying to find a way to get them involved in the classroom. And I think a lot of times too, at least in my experience, a lot of the struggling students are students who are maybe new to the school as a whole. I think we need to do a better job making students feel included or accepted in a new environment. A lot of students struggle because maybe they've had family dynamics or situations where they've moved and switched schools. And so how do we get them to feel involved, included, and valued within your classroom? I think that's probably a lot of times where the struggles come from. We just had to do a better job of that overall. Maybe it's not new to the building. Maybe they're not new to the school district, but they are new to your classroom. And especially in middle school, sixth graders are jumped to middle school. It's just different. They're switching classes. We just got to keep an eye on those students and make sure they feel included.
Absolutely. I think you just nailed it. I think as students move up through the grades, right, they start to become more aware, right? When you look at students in grade one and grade two, they go into the class and they're interacting with each other. They're proud of who they are. They're just having a blast. But it seems like every year students start to recognize, oh, and they worry about being judged. They worry about what other people are thinking. And as we work our way up, and you sort of triggered a memory of mine that I haven't thought about in quite some time, but I think it's worth all of us thinking about. As a former high school math teacher, I was in the classroom and I remember in the early years almost avoiding group work where I mixed up the groups because I didn't want to put any students in an awkward situation. I was concerned for that to happen. And it was almost like I avoided it. And it's a little epiphany I've had here on this podcast. But what I recognize is that the sooner we can do that, right? And you were talking about building relationships, teacher and students, but the sooner we can help those students all build relationships together early in that classroom environment and continue to do that work so it doesn't become very clicky, right? It just emphasizes some of the work that Peter Lildahl's work with random grouping has sort of brought as an aside to the math classroom, is bringing students together so that everyone feels like they're a part of that math community, whether they're new to the school, maybe they're just new to that group of students, right? If it's a large school, maybe they've never been in classes with some of these students before and they might feel a little bit shy or introverted. So that's a little takeaway for me that I've taken away. The other piece I wanted to comment on is this idea of relationship building and what we can do as educators. So for those who are listening, and if you're thinking about, hey, I want to make sure that I start off next school year with a bang, we do have resources for starting the school year off right. So there's a series of activities. I know, John, we just recently shared out the Math is Like activity in a recent email for those who are on the email list. However, there's an awesome resource if you head to makemathmoments.com/start. Those who are thinking over the summer about, hey, how am I going to start off next year so that I feel like the students know that I can be known, liked, and trusted by them, that we could build that relationship. So just like we're hearing from Tom here, that we can better identify earlier those students who may struggle a little bit more than some other students. So that, Tom, I vividly remember being that guy. I sort of knew this was going to happen at the end of the school year. I missed it. I didn't do enough to help that student. So let's do that from day one. My friend, Tom, you've given me a big takeaway just reflecting on that. How about you, my friend, from this conversation? What's on your mind now? And what have you, I guess, gained from this reflective conversation we've had here today?
I like how you mentioned as you move up through the grades and students start to feel different as they go through the grades. And it just made me think back to a question that I ask our students a lot of times, because as a father of three and my daughter getting older, I always worry, at what age do students not enjoy school anymore? I ask our sixth graders, because I teach sixth grade, which is to me the best grade to teach, just because there still is a high level of curiosity, a high level of innocence. But, you know, I think it's important to think about, as students get older, they fall out of love with learning. And why does it happen? And when does it happen? And it's obviously fun for everybody. But as teachers, we got to try our best to keep that curiosity level going and keep that innocence going as long as we possibly can. And That's why I don't want to move away from sixth grade, is just because I feel like there's a ton of aha moments that still occur with sixth graders. But, and then also lastly, I think, like I've said before, I'm a high school baseball coach. We just had a pretty successful season, and I attribute it all to the physical connection between players. And I think in sixth grade math, a fist bump after you get an answer right, or you have a good question, or you're involved in the class, or a high five. I think as much as you can connect with students and that physical touch, now that we're kind of out of the COVID era, so the fist bump or the high five is vitally important in your classroom, and just making kids feel welcome and connected to everybody is so important.
I think those are great takeaways, Tom, and great takeaways for the listener to kind of think about and reflect on their classroom experiences and what they can be doing over the summer to get ready for that start of the school year. I think it's so important to kind of stretch that curiosity a little longer. And if you're teaching higher grades, how can you kind of think like Tom here? How can you think about kind of bringing that curiosity back into your classroom so that you can be in a position to build these relationships that we know go a long way to solving so many of the problems that we regularly feel in the classroom? So, Tom, I want to thank you for joining us here on the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. And hey, as always, we're going to reach out again, Tom, again. It's been a yearly thing for us in chatting with you, so we got to keep that going.
I enjoy it. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for joining us, and enjoy that summertime.
Thank you.
As always, both John and I learned so much from every Math Mentoring Moment episode. And this one in particular, I really like, because it seems like we've met Tom. We've spoken with him so many times. I love the passion when he's describing his math classroom, the community that's been built. And really, when I think about this, I'm picturing that in his math classroom, he's talking a lot about the soil, the sun, the water of that tree, right? He's talking about the mindsets, the beliefs. And these are all things that we can heavily impact. And it sounds like Tom has obviously put a lot of thought and effort into that particular part of his tree, but don't let the other parts go unnoticed. The part I'm going to bring up is this idea around the content knowledge and the mathematical proficiency piece, those roots of the tree, when he was talking about number strings and just the fluency and flexibility he's seeing develop in his grade six students, I think is just fantastic.
I love it there, Kyle. And we're excited to chat with him again for a fourth time, probably next year. So stay tuned to continue Tom's journey. If you want to chat with us about a current pebble in your shoe, then we encourage you to head on over to makemathmoments.com/mentor. That's makemathmoments.com/mentor. We got a quick little form there for you to fill out. All you have to do is put your name, your contact info, and a little bit about the pebble you're experiencing. And if you share that pebble there, we might reach out to you and have a chat here on the podcast. And hey, if you have that pebble, chances are other teachers have that pebble. So I know that sometimes you can be nervous, or you can be a little bit kind of hesitant to talk to the two of us and be broadcast, but everyone who has done that has made changes in their classroom, but also felt so great afterwards, after the conversation. So we're going to encourage you to do that, not only to help yourself, but help fellow educators that are helping students just like yours.
Awesome. And friends, head on over to the show notes page over at makemathmoments.com/episode 242. You're going to find all kinds of great goodies, including links that we referenced here, including our How to Start the School Year Off Right guide. You can go check that out once again over at makemathmoments.com/episode 242. Well, until next time, my Math Moment Maker friends, I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr.
High fives for us.
And a high five for you. If you are a district leader of mathematics, a math coach, a math curriculum coordinator, a superintendent, and principal, getting teacher buy-in for effective math teaching practice is top of mind. And plans only go so far. You can make, you know, detailed plans and carefully designed goals with clear objectives and key results that are measurable. But that can feel like it all falls flat
if we can't engage our teachers in the work. Working with teachers who do not want to change their teaching practices is one of the most frustrating and challenging parts of our job. How do I help teachers engage in effective teaching practices when they keep pushing us away? If you can't reach the tipping point in mass adoption of effective mathematics teaching strategies, then it's likely we won't see student improvement in mathematics. We have a free training and accompanying workbook for leaders of mathematics like you. The Make Math Moments team, myself, John, and Kyle walk you through our four-stage process we use with district partners to create clear, measurable, sustainable PD action plans, but more specifically on how to also get teacher buy-in so that it drives student engagement. So step one, register for this free training, get your planning workbook, and then watch the training. Schedule some time on your calendar so you can watch it and go through the workbook. After completing that workbook, you're going to have a clear, measurable vision, action plan for mathematics to get more teacher buy-in, but also be able to hit your goals for the 2024-2025 school year. So head on over to makemathmoments.com/4stages to start this free training.